Namaste. Key elements of the integral yoga. I think that is the subject. First thing we need to understand is that yoga is a specialized effort and it doesn't come naturally and easily to everyone. It is both Savasana and Sirsasana at the same time. By Savasana I mean one has to die to the old. It doesn't leave so easily. One has to die to the old to be reborn to the new. The mother uses the word rebirth. And we cannot die to the old so long as we are deeply attached to it. We believe that, you know, everything is wonderful. Yoga begins where we begin to understand, to quote Savitri, all is too little that the world can give. Its knowledge and power are the gifts of time and cannot fill the spirit's sacred thirst. The value of water is known only when there is thirst. There was a disciple who was going from one town to another, and he asked his guru for some advice. He said, whenever you have to eat the best possible food. And when you are thirsty, eat the best possible drink. And when you are sleeping, sleep on the best possible mattress you can imagine. So he was wondering what kind of advice. I'm not going to get any of this on the way. And slowly he understood. When you are hungry, then everything tastes like paradise. And when we are not hungry, then it's okay, it could have been this way better, that way better. So too when we are thirsty. So yoga is a thirst. And if the thirst is not there and something is forcibly given to us, even if it is the best possible paradisal ambrosia, we will compare it with Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and will probably, in all likelihood, just taste it, discard it. So Shurbindu used the word call for the yoga. And in ancient times, there was a great stress laid on adhikar bhed. Not everybody is meant to do everything, which is perfectly fine. Also because it's an evolutionary journey. So we are all at different stages in this evolutionary process. That's why all conversion and the spirit of evangelism and trying to convince others is contrary to the spirit of yoga. The spirit breathes where it lists. We don't know why it lists. At a stage comes when we feel this call. This call means, of course, not a letter, though sometimes it can take that form. Inwardly we feel that this is what I want to do. This is what I'm meant for. It doesn't mean that we stop doing other things. Yoga is an inner pursuit. There is nothing we leave outside, but everything we leave inside. Not sannyas, but tyag. If the call is there, wonderful. If the call is not there and we feel attracted, we may feel attracted to a doctrine, to words, we may admire. It's okay. That can be a starting point. But there is a difference between standing on the shores and analyzing the sea and actually walking into it. Analyzing the sea from the surface is safe, but along with the danger of entering into the sea comes the delight. First we drown, then we surf the waves. And if we are afraid of the vastness, afraid of losing our little individuality, then obviously we are not at this point ready for yoga. But we can be ready for yoga by becoming conscious. This is what yesterday we were touching upon. We are not conscious of ourselves, just a little fraction. And to become conscious, most important is the hidden motives. So why we want to undertake the journey of yoga is at least as important. As the mother says, if you want to get power, if you want to be a sadhak, recognized like a yogi, nowadays yogi is big business. If you want to impress people, showmanship, if you want to believe I have written my book in the name of the elite, then it's a non-starter. Yoga begins when we are enamored of the divine. And when we are enamored of the divine, then there is nothing else that we can do except to give ourselves. It's a helpless, beautiful state. So yoga begins like that. Of course, very few have that direct entry of being enamored by the divine. We are normally attracted by some manifestation of the divine. And that's why we have the master. That's why we have certain aspects through which we approach. Everyone sees in the mother some aspect or the other and feels drawn. But to somebody who has all recognized because of the past, whatever, life's preparation or a special grace, then life is finished. Or we can say life begins. So there has to be a call for the yoga and we must know what we are signing in for. So what does it mean, call for the yoga and entry into yoga? As I said, along with Savasan, there is Sirsasan. World turns upside down. Mother uses the word reversal of consciousness. We no more see. We see the same things, but no more see the same things. We act apparently in the same way as before. We eat, we sleep, we meet, we engage with the world, but we no more meet, eat, sleep, engage in the same way. And this is the inner change that begins to take place. And along with that, we need to understand how this yoga operates. There is no formal initiation in this yoga. Call is sufficient. There is no Guruji going to tell us that, okay, you are in. If you have the call, we are in. And Sri Aurobindo, there are so many wonderful letters like that. Even there are some humorous anecdotes with Amrita, and he says, "Aunt, don't you know you're already in?" People don't understand. They feel somebody will one day initiate me. This is initiation. It's the inmost initiation. There are gurus who initiate with touch of the hand. There are gurus who initiate by giving a mantra. There are gurus who initiate by the drishti. There are gurus who initiate with touch, shaktipat of various kinds. How do Mother and Sri Aurobindo initiate? They send a call direct to the soul, no mediator. And when this call touches us, that's it, done. Until then, yes, preparation in various ways, reading their books with people. As I said, there's a difference between learning about a mountain and climbing the mountain. So this first thing. Second thing is that the goal of this yoga is not a personal escape into moksha, nirvana, but its goal in one word is divine manifestation. Participating in the divine manifestation. What it means is that Sri Aurobindo says this world is not maya in the sense that it's not an illusion. So those who believe in this is an illusion, obviously it doesn't make sense. It's not even Leela the way we understand, because Leela gives a sense the divine is playing for his own joy. Yes, it's true, but what about us caught in the melee? So what's happening in the world is a progressive manifestation of the divine, who is at the core, at the root, and it's very logical. A poet writes the poem because it's there within him and he is writing it. The poem is not yet over. So this, the purpose for which creation is if you want to use a purpose, basically it's delight manifesting in countless ways at so many levels, but if the human mind has to give a purpose, it's for manifestation. So the goal of this yoga is not a personal salvation. Yes, it brings freedom and tremendous freedom. There is no greater freedom than to live in the divine. There is no greater sense of power than to live in the divine. Just imagine for a moment that mother is with us all the time. What does it mean? There is no greater freedom. And yet it's scary because it's no more me then. So this call for the yoga, first thing is that it means centering our life around the divine. And second very interesting thing about this yoga is that it does not proceed according to any set method. There is no one method in this yoga. Everybody should meditate in this way. There are no courses of this yoga. There are no camps of this yoga, which makes it wonderful because it's very vast. It allows a great degree of inner freedom to each individual because each one is unique, different. It's not meant for Easterners, Westerners, Hindus, Muslims, Christians. Rather, it goes beyond all of this. So it's once the call is there, then it doesn't go according to set method. So people sometimes feel very unnerved. In the beginning, when you are a new entrant, I remember asking a couple of people, and whomever I asked, everybody would say surrender. Of course, I was reading the books and all, you know, I must do it this way, that way, trying. And one day, Chote Narayanji told me something very simple. He said, Mataji ka naam lo, call the mother's name. So I said, that I understand, but what else I have to do? He said, call the mother's name. Is it that simple? I thought, he is not wanting to disclose the greatest secrets. Then I realized that calling the mother's name itself, just try half an hour. Okay, 15 minutes, 10 minutes. Just calling mother's name. Ma, 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 ma. Holding on to ma or being held by ma. How the mind runs. Call the mother's name. This is what people used to say. When mother was asked by the disciple, mother, tell us one method, our method. She says, I am here to do the yoga for you. No, no, mother, but still some method. Then she speaks about the mantra and opening to her. So at one level, it's very easy, extremely easy, such a difficult work. Transformation, it's just unimaginable. Transformation is for the manifestation of the divine. With our present instruments, divine cannot be manifested. That's Shobindu's solution, that if we remain human with the human instruments, human limitations, human capacities, human incapacities, whatever it be, we can forget about this world becoming a beautiful place. We'll have systems, governments, we'll change regulations, rules, everything, all this is part of the play. Process, but we cannot make this world a beautiful, perfect place because we are the ones who are still we. If human nature, human consciousness doesn't change, then we have to either write off the world or talk about escape into nirvana or a post-mortem salvation in the beyond. But here Shurvindu says, no, it can be changed, it will be changed. Evolution, transformation is in the very logic of things. So we should know we are participating in that process. It requires that the work is at two levels. One is in seeking the divine, in connecting with the divine mother, because that's the core of the work. And on the other hand, when she starts using the human instrument to manifest, if the human instrument is not ready, not prepared, in various ways it may not be ready. It may break down under the intensity of that pressure, that love, that light, that force. So the mother says, uses the word double perfection. One has to work at the lower end and the upper end. Body itself may break down. There are people who quite experience this when people go for the first time to the ashram. They feel very sleepy, as if they are drugged. And you think it's the weather of Pondicherry. You have all kinds of hypothesis. till you discover that why you are drugged. I'm sorry I get tempted in between to say a line or two of something I remember. It's not in English, but I'll translate for sure because Radhe has instructed me. But to get the flavor of it, mujhe be khudi ki tune bhali chashni chatai. Be khudi, I have forgotten myself. Be khudi. So why? Because you made me taste the sweet. Sweet, you know, when something you taste which is amazing. So what happens? You are no more you. You're just a wow. You become that which you have tasted. Chasani chatai. You were just lost in that peace and bliss and whatever. So that is what this does to us. But are we ready for it? That intensity, that force, that pressure felt on the human consciousness. And this pressure is fine as long as some nice parts are, there is always in us something which is open. So yoga is wonderful. When, you know, initially that's how she works. Shobhinda says it works like a free flowing method. So the Divine Mother touches those parts which are ready. Maybe the heart is ready. Wonderful. And you feel a lot of love for her. And love for creation. And this love is no more a human love. Cabined and boundaries into various relations. And then the mind may feel the pressure. It may be open. But there are parts in us which are not only not open but resist. They don't want to yield the kingdom to the divine. They want to continue with the old hegemony. And when there is pressure on these parts, they react, they respond, they resist. And a battle can ensue. That's why adhikar bhed. That's why the necessity that, you know, if one has the call, one goes through everything. If one is ready to surrender and grow sincere, one goes through everything. If one has the faith and can endure, one goes through everything. Otherwise, suddenly when these parts are touched, you see, the worst enemy is not when somebody is attacked from outside. It is known, and now people have understood this battle. No more we have one country attacking another. That's old game. Now you have enemies within, which is very dangerous. You can't even recognize where is the enemy. He is our own person. He is our own people. See, this is the strategy of all wars today and in the future. You know, this brute attack from tanks and all this is very brute. But now what people do, there are people who are disgruntled, complaining, and there is always in us something which is complaining, disgruntled about something or the other. That is dust. And when it is something within, it becomes so difficult. That's why people who retreat into... this retreat is fine, but retreat... this is an inner retreat, but people who retreat into Himalaya and they say we will not speak for 3 days or 10 days, we will not do this and we will not do that. So I remind them the story of Shikhi Dhwaj. I am not going to repeat it unless somebody has. You can Google search, nowadays everything is available, I think. Shikhi Dhwaj and Chudala. But the crux of the story is very simple. One may go anywhere, one may go to the ashram, but we can't run away from ourselves. I carry my nature wherever I go. I may change people in my life, I may change my job, I may change my situation, circumstance, but unless I change, the same problem will touch me. Unless I look within and see, there is something within me, maybe an attitude, maybe some reorienting of goal, maybe something which just refuses the divine. Maybe something which contradicts. So that's why this yoga, as it proceeds, enters into these lanes and by lanes. And by the way, this yoga, since we spoke about internal enemies, this yoga is going on in countries and the world. It's a world yoga. The world is going through this yoga, where on one side there is this things which are open towards a new light and things that resist in nations also. And we can only understand it if we bring this picture of yoga. And then we have the solution of how to aligning it. Otherwise we'll keep on endlessly fighting. This alignment is towards a higher consciousness. That means one has to have the will to ultimately, will and faith. Two things Aurobindo says is most important in this yoga. Not a technique. It's not a yoga of techniques. Will and faith. Faith means whatever it takes, this is what I want. And because somebody has or something has awakened this need in me, it will be so. Destiny has picked me, that's why I'm here. And because I am here, picked up by destiny, behind destiny, it's the divine. And because he is there behind, this is going to be. This faith is necessary. And endurance. This faith is very easy when everything is going fine. Actually, if one has faith when everything is going fine, then it's not really technically faith. It's naturally, logically, a calculated belief. But faith is to know that through everything, things that I understand, things that I don't, pleasant, painful, the divine is carrying me or carrying me through. And if we have this faith, we'll see through a process how everything develops. And endurance. It's not something which yoga is the most difficult, and if I may say so, dangerous adventure. All the forces of the world are arrayed against it. Suddenly, people whom one cared for and loved, they themselves may start being against. What is all this nonsense? In India, you have the same thing. I had a peculiar situation. Everybody has Ramji, Krishnaji, my house also, all the God, Devi, Devta, Guruji, so many. Why you have found somebody in Pondicherry? I said, I haven't found. But he has found. No, okay, go, but it's theek hai, you go to so many gurus, babas, one of them. So what do? You still have to go. So you have to go through that process. And that process can be very exacting. One has to endure the journey. You may be misunderstood. The world may misunderstand. And frankly speaking, if the world misunderstands, then you are on track. If everybody understands and you are very popular, look inside. I'm very happy when somebody criticizes. Say, here is a person who is my friend. Teach me something I don't know. But if one is wanting to be surrounded by flatterers and, you know, again, this yoga is not there. And these things come to awaken in us something that, okay, maybe I missed out. Maybe a child will say something. So that's why vigilance. Vigilance is to make use of everything. This is a yoga which is conterminous with life. Suddenly somebody says, oh, wow, what a lovely talk. And inside something is jumping. And oh, the ego, the old is not dead. Savasana is not complete. There's a twitch inside. Outwardly, one may say, ha, sab mataji hain. All is her grace. But inwardly it is, see? If something is twitching, look at that person. Savasana is not complete. Savasana has to be Shivasana actually. Or if somebody is criticizing, ignorant fellow, he doesn't know. That's why first fundamental thing of yoga is to see the divine everywhere in everything. It's so difficult. Everything that is coming, see that divine element, discard the rest. It's like husk and the wheat. Mother gives this example that we have to take out the wheat, grain of wheat. And grain of wheat is surrounded by husk and there is a long shaft. If you see, actually, just a few grains of wheat will come out of a that shoot. So one has to pick up that. So that's how we are like farmers who are looking for that grain of divine gold which is contained in everything. It has transforming effect on everything because everybody contains a little bit of grain of gold. and discard the rest. It's there. Human life is full of, your own life is imperfect. So it doesn't act according to a set method, but uses all life and experience as an opportunity to awaken us. We may miss it, or we may take it. That's what is called as Surasya Dhara Nishitha Duratya Kavyo Vadanti. Surasya Dhara is not tying a, I'll not sleep, I'll keep awake, I'll tan ke baitna. That's not Surasya Dhara. Surasya Dhara, see, blade, it's walking on a edge of sword or blade. So what happens when you walk? It's very interesting simile given in the Upanishad, and it took me a while to really understand. Now, you have to walk on a blade. You have to walk. You have to put the right kind of pressure. That's the secret. Otherwise, you are cut. So, all events and circumstances, one has to be ready, vigilant, to make use of them and grow through them, progress. That's how one develops, grows in this yoga. And this world will give abundant situations to progress, because this world is very kind. So it will throw pain, it will throw presence, pleasurable things. It will throw. Why? Because it is meant to help us to do yoga. That's why I say, if you see, in India is called as a land of yoga. Whereas all around it's a land for bhoga. Bhog yoni and yog yoni. Bhog yoni is everything wonderful. You have a machine which is exact and precise and serviceable and artificial and false. That's how Shobindu describes in Savitri. Everything is push button, everything wonderful. So there is bhoga. Maybe one life one has to enjoy. But if one can do yoga while in bhoga, then it's so wonderful. Otherwise, what follows after bhoga is roga. All kinds of maladies of the mind and the body compelling us to do yoga. Long route. You have sweet but you cannot eat. You have push button but you have to walk. You have no choice. You are supposed to walk up and down the stairs. But land of yoga means not people start looking for yogis in India. And by yogis they think people who have beard and who are always wearing one color clothes. No, that's again a show. Who is a yogi? How beautifully Shri Krishna is regarded as Yogi Yogeshwar. He is fighting a battle. It's the inner state. What is the inner state of the yogi? That's what Sri Aurobindo describes to us. So in India, as I said, you have so many challenges and people often complain. Not that one should make things better and better, there's always scope. But I say, yes, it is a yoga land, land of yoga. You cannot step out and go through the traffic unless you are inwardly in a state of equanimity. Bhaj Govindam, because sometimes when I drive through roads of US and somebody says, oh, this is such a traffic jam. So I say, don't speak of traffic jam in front of an Indian. You don't know what traffic jam is. So what do you do? Throwing the hand off. Why is it very good? Sit inside. So much more time to be alone with the mother. Nobody to bother you. Chill, relax, let go. You practice. Endure. So you see this. These are the things. Yoga is not what we do outside. It's what we do inside. So what we have to do inside, first thing is aspiration. Aspire, 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 aspire. Aspire for what? Nobody can tell us. But in short, for the divine. Whatever way we conceive of the divine, to be one with him, to serve him, to love him, to open to the divine, whatever way. Aspire. And when does the aspiration come? When we realize all is too little that the world can give. That's why sometimes in our individual life and collective life of society, we have to go through so much turmoil just to reach that point to understand that all is too little that the world can give. But if we can understand it while everything is fine, so much the better. We don't have to go through that painful process. So aspire. This aspiration, because there is a difficulty in life, that vairagya and all that stuff is not spoken of in this yoga. Vairagya is for the defeated soul. Here we are engaged in the victory of the divine. One who cannot face the challenges of worldly life. How can one face the challenges of yoga? Why? Because worldly life challenge is outside. You don't like someone, you can stay away. And here the challenge is within you. You don't like something, you can't just run away from yourself. You confront it. One confronts it. And there are things which we do with it. We'll come to a little later. But aspiration. Not because the world is bad. Well, all that is fine. We can talk for hours about it. But simply because this need for the divine, this thirst for the divine. And if that has awakened, then one is on the royal grand trunk road of yoga. What people think, say, doesn't matter. Aspire. Aspiration is symbolized as a fire. It's actually a fire. If one has the subtle vision, one can see the fire. Actually, it gives warmth and heat, even physically the body. That's what is tapas. Tap. Tap literally means heat. So solution for... when there is too much cold, aspire. Agni. Ag, it pushes us forward. Aspire. And one can do it anywhere. One can do it in a crammed up flight environment. One can do it sitting on the open fields. Anywhere. See, yoga that goes on all the time. Aspiration, living fire for the divine, this need of the divine, thirst for the divine. And then along with that, there's a movement of yoga which people find very difficult, is rejection. Because we think I have to reject this person, or I have to reject that situation, I have to reject that. But actually we have to reject certain tendencies, attitudes, certain malware in the software of life. Certain viruses which have entered into it. That's all that is to be rejected. Let's take one example. People are very afraid. Oh, you have to conquer desire. Let's say we want to do something. Often I take this example that when people play table tennis, one of the games I enjoyed. See, as long as you are not playing in the competition, you play very well. You are enjoying it. You feel so happy. You can play for hours and you are so happy. Now, the moment you enter into the competition, either you start getting wrong shots, or if you win, it's a very strenuous thing. That game becomes such an effort. Why? Because the virus of ambition has entered. Same thing with fear. Oh, corona, this, that. Okay, it is there. It's a challenge thrown at us and we have to face it. But the moment fear comes in, it paralyzes. Even the immune system gets paralyzed because it does not know. It's pretty confused. It's flight, fright, freeze. What to do? It freezes. It's not getting the right signal. But if you are quiet, that's the remedy Sri Aurobindo gave for influenza, virus, epidemic influenza. Same flu virus, not COVID-19, but anyways, that time it was as bad as that. He says there is nothing to fear. It comes because of these three layers. There is a material substance. There is within it bad will, or a force of bad will, adverse force. Then there is the suggestion of fear that creates the illness. And remain quiet, turn to the mother, open to her, and things will be fine. As simple as that. So, when we remove the virus of fear, this is the greatest impurity in human nature. We are afraid of everything, even afraid of God. Why? Because he will take away our ego individuality. Yes, he will, but what we get is something much, much, much greater, bigger. That's why Mother says true surrender enlarges you. It aggrandizes. Not the word aggrandizement in the true sense, because our own divine possibilities are released, which are held back because I want to remain only this little. Imagine a child forever remains Papa's child. So what happens if he's always Papa's child? His true possibilities are never released, never realized. So too, if we remain stuck with our little ego in individuality, then we never realize our divine potential. And to realize the divine potential, we have to reorient. We have to remember that who we truly are. So many ways in yoga, soham asmi, but of course soham asmi carries a little bit of problem. I may feel my ego is God. So that's why the simpler way is I am mother's child. It's much simpler, safe. I am same as God, tattvamasi. They can be very, you know, that's how Ravan got that from the wrong end. So that's why bhakti has this advantage. Of course it has its own issues, but anyways. So rejection of all that stands in the way to the fulfillment of the yoga, meaning thereby rejection of kaam, krodh, lobh. There is a list of six to that mother has added, fear. So why all these things have to be rejected? And really it's not so difficult once we understand how they work. Kaam, desire, it actually pollutes our life. Very frankly, as child, I remember people would often say, oh, you know, go and see how life is in the slums. I'm not advocating life should be in the slum. Children are happy, very naturally happy. It's the state of our state. Till somebody comes and says, if you have this, then only you will be happy. Kama enters. And kama has a strange logic. There is a whole poem of Sri Aurobindo on kama. Recently I had read it in one of the talks. And he says, they who chase me shall lose, and they who abandon shall find. Chase desire with that fruit hanging. This fruit is like, you know, people how they make the horse run. It's literally hang a carrot in front and you are running. But you never get it. So very logically, if we see, one must act because of the joy of working, because one needs to do it well. This is a great joy when you do something which is creative and beautiful, and still greater if you do it as a worship. Work should become worship. Not because somebody will appreciate me. The moment I have somebody in mind, then the straight natural response is now perverted. It's like those who want to, when their company CEO comes, they try to put up a very nice, so, sir, how are you, sir? Sir, but look what happens behind. How they deal with the customers, how they deal. Because you're trying to put across a show, which ultimately doesn't pay us back, because we lose the natural joy. Now, my joy is now dependent on how that person responds. So desire corrupts the original file. And so many examples I could give. Every desire corrupts the straight natural movement of truth, which is so wonderful. That's called dharma. Dharma is the straight natural response of truth within the heart. We cannot give it. Why? Because we are afraid. If I don't flatter, maybe I'll lose my job. But we don't have to be bitter and angry. We just have to be true and honest. And when we live by dharma, then dharma protects you. There is a very beautiful saying in Sanskrit. Dharmi rakshati dharmaha. If you live by dharma, dharma takes care of you. How it does it has its own way. But that's one part of it. So we have to reject desire, kama, krodha. Why krodh? From kama comes krodha. We desire, and if we don't get, we are frustrated, we are angry. And from krodha comes moha. More, you know, we are attached. Now I want it. Somehow I want it. Krodhat bhavati sammoha. And from moha, delusion, there comes loss of memory of the self. The goal, I lose the goal. I become anger, and from loss of memory of the self, there is total fall. So we have to change this cycle. So krodha has to be rejected, anger. And this is what yoga is about. It's a new alchemy. That's the alchemy, the alchemist. We have to give another response than what we habitually give to situation, circumstances. Kama, krodha, lobha. Lobh is like a crocodile. So, lobha, wanting more, 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 and we start again deviating from this, always wanting a little more. No, there is always this story, then when people have very little, they want just, God, if you can give me just a little, he gives a little. Well, maybe little more? Little more. More. Much more. This much more goes on to, you know, till one day he says, okay, enough of this game. I am going to take away. How you will take away? We start complaining. Are he gave you. He takes away. Why? Because you remember that behind all this, what is it that we are seeking? And then we stamp karma theory, this theory, that theory. It's a grace. So, rejection of this moha, this vicarious attachment. Be with everything. If you have money, use it rightly, wisely, nicely. If you have a good bed, sleep peacefully. But if you have to sleep on the floor, sleep as beautifully. People, you know, Champaklalji, I don't know where I was yesterday, this thought came, and I'll ask you later, where was he sleeping? But many of the places I know that when he went to certain places, he would say, I want to sleep on the floor if there is a mother's picture, and he would sleep on the floor. That's what made him a Champaklal. But equally, if there is a bed, you are comfortable. It's not that you are trying to. So we don't have to reject anything outside. In a relationship, same thing. All these reactions that arise, anger, frustration, fears, attachments, wanting somebody to love you, and you are twisting and turning yourself till you do end up doing sirsasan for that fellow. And still nothing happens. Because if you get into that groove, you can never make anybody happy. Forget trying that. So, if you look at it, yoga is a most practical thing. Rejection is so beautiful because it helps us. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mad, idea of power, I am someone and something, somebody. Matsar, jealousies and fears. Actually, if we look at it and analyze it, just discern it, we'll see it's a terrible virus. And then we will try to keep away every which way. So how to keep it away? Very simple. There is a prayer of the mother, 28th December. She says, there is a knowledge that one finds, there is a peace that one finds nowhere, not even in death. There is a knowledge of which no philosophy or no system, I'm just slightly paraphrasing it. I mean, accurate memory would not be there, so people can check it. That's why I mentioned the date. One finds nowhere, in no book of philosophy you can find that knowledge. There is a power that no ruler can command. There is a thirst for love which no human can fulfill. There is a bliss that one finds nowhere and in nothing. And then she gives the remedy. It is the peace, the knowledge, the power, the love, the bliss that flow from the divine grace. To turn to that grace, to turn to her. That's why in Pondicherry, one of the refrain when people ask, everything well? Or how are you? One word answer should be grace. It means, whether it be seem, the line from Savitri, whether it seem good or evil to man's eyes, only for good the eternal will can work. Grace. Somebody may feel, oh, you know, like that general in the World War, my right flank is gone and the left flank is gone and I am marching ahead and all is good. So that's grace. Tremendous faith in grace. Grace, that mysterious alchemist energy. And if we learn to abandon ourselves and trust that grace, everything changes. So the third movement, which is actually the first, it's not one, two, three, aspiration, then rejection, this surrender, they all go together. But the most important part, if one cannot practice all of this, then surrender. Shubhendu says the yoga begins with surrender, it proceeds with surrender, it finds its fulfillment in surrender. What does surrender mean? Oh, it's very easy. I give myself to you. So it's like that yogi. He said, I am egoless, free. Then swore because his dinner was not ready. I asked him, are you so very sure that you have found the self? He says, it's not me, it's my belly god that is unsteady. What really is surrender? Just conceive for a moment. If I say I have surrendered myself to X, very dangerous, don't surrender to anyone except divine. This hard-won individuality. But when we surrender to divine, what does it mean? Or let's, for example, if you say I have surrendered to you, then now my will belongs to that person. My thoughts belong to that person. My feelings belong to that function. That's why individuality is by, you know, holding on. It's very precious at a stage of human evolution. We cannot surrender if we are not an individual. I can't say I can't pick up this water bottle and give to somebody I have surrendered. Or pickpocket somebody and give it to, I am giving this money. It's not, I have to first win it for myself. That's why individualization is so important. I can't be at the mercy of all the forces and say, I have surrendered. That's why when somebody went to Swami Vivekananda and said, I want to renounce. He said, what do you have to renounce? Young boy, 21. He said, okay, go. First earn 1 lakh rupees, then you talk about renunciation. So surrender implies, before surrender, there is an individuality which is formed. It's an important process in yoga, which many people just miss out. We are a mass. Every thought, every whisper, every suggestion, every knock at the senses, we are jumping and we have surrendered. We have to first get this and become one single whole, where we choose what we have to choose and we stand by that choice. This is what phase individuality is going through. Then only the psychic being can emerge from inside. So this is surrender. Starts with first step. It is presumed that one has gone through that process. If one has not gone through that process, we can only talk about surrender. And that's why adhikar bhed and all these things. So then one surrenders. But once this individuality surrenders, Arjun surrendered to Shri Krishna. What did he say? Shishyasteham sadhimam. He says, I'm pretty confused. Tell me what to do. And there is a question answer, beautiful format. One of the beauty of the Gita is a question answer format. It's not a blind belief system. You just accept because it's the word of God. You go through question answer, but once he's clear, and that was Shri Krishna's whole strategy, that let him be clear. All confusion should be cleared, because he has started by saying that Shishyasteham Sadhimam. Now I want to learn from you. I have surrendered myself to you. Where does it culminate? Sarvadharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Now you have to surrender yourself completely. After that surrender, if Arjun hesitates, he did hesitate a few times. No, I want to act according to my will. No, I'll act according to the counsel of my brother. I will go by the democratic election process. That's not surrender. Surrender means now my will is the divine will. I want to obey the divine will. I may not know it. Quite naturally, I may not know it. I may have all kinds of guesses. So I must try to find the divine will. And for that, all preferences, all this has to become quiet. We cannot know the divine will, actually, if I have preferences. Because I'll give that coloring, like people kill and they justify it in the name of God. And kill whom? Innocents. Kill people who are, you know, children, small children. They blow them up, wearing bombs on their vests. And they say, this is what God wants me to do. At least say that I want to do it because I feel this is... Don't use in the name of God. So that's not surrender, where we are justifying things in the name of God. Surrender means that I want to obey the divine impulsion, so I have to be quiet. Surrender means I love the divine in the beautiful and the ugly, in the lovely and the terrible, in every mask, because now I must love the divine. And since divine dwells in everybody as a presence, I can't hate anymore. I can't say I hate you. I can hate the, hate is a very strong emotion anyways, it's horrible. But I can say I don't like this part of yours, but there is always that beautiful divine element. It can change our life actually. When we surrender to the divine, it can make life beautiful. Because imagine if we see the divine element in those who are in contact with us, how it's going to change so beautifully. That's the whole message of Yajnavalk, and that's how divine beings connect with those around them. So surrender means I will love the divine. All my emotions should be those that lift towards the divine. They must mirror that sacred joy. It means I will feel what I can feel freely in front of the mother. Will I say in front of mother, mother, I am feeling very angry, I want to hit this fellow. Somebody went and prayed every day to mother. Oh, this person I don't like. This should happen, that should happen. And this person kept prospering. So after 6 months, he couldn't bear it. He said, mother, aren't you hearing my prayer? He said, I am hearing. So why this is happening? She said, because you are putting that person's consciousness in contact with mine. What do you expect is going to happen? See, when Ravan was told that, why don't you one day take the form? You have all the mayas. You take the form of Rama and go to Sita. End of story. She will think it is Rama who has come. Take her anywhere. Do whatever you wish. She said, don't give me that advice. Even when I think of Rama as an enemy, I start experiencing a beautiful change and I don't want it. If I take that form of Rama, I don't know. I won't be Ravan anymore. I'll lose my individuality. So to feel it, the name of the divine, love for the divine, makes all emotions sacred and beautiful. It's impossible to do things which are of a vulgar nature, crude, because that's the power of that divine love. It is the transmitting power. Then think, thoughts. Imagine the divine is, mother is right there. Will I worry about 101 things? This is the story of this Rani Rasmani who had offered all the money to Sri Ramakrishna. For that, all the money means not all her money, but all the money for building the temple of Kali. And she was a great devotee. And Sri Ramakrishna, some of us must have seen that pose when he's dancing in ecstasy. He used to do that. He was dancing in that ecstasy. Suddenly goes and gives a tight slap to Rani Rasmani. What happened? And everybody is surprised. What has happened? But she understands, she smiles. And she says, you know what? I was thinking of the court case. Here is Kali, and I'm thinking of the court case. What a stupid thing to do. When divine is with us, is there anything to be afraid of? Anything which can shake us and our nerves get jittery. So all this is a sign that surrender is not complete. That's why it starts with surrender. Shishyasteham sadhimam. I belong to you. So wonderful to say I belong to the divine. Divine will see for some time. After some time he says, yes. And then the mother says, once you have said to the divine, I want to be yours. And the divine has said yes. Then the whole world cannot keep you away. Meaning thereby, don't. World will be there. Everything will be there. He is not going to demolish anything. Because it's his world, he is in it. But it's your relation which changes. If you don't change, then there will be two people are pulling in two different directions. You belong to the divine very naturally, spontaneously. Everything is there. You're not declaring that today onwards I'll wear a saffron robe. Don't come near me. Huh? Better. Saffron robe may be fine for safety, though it's no more safe anymore. But you may say that, you know, keep away from me. No. But inwardly, or white robe, or for that matter, any robe. But it simply, inwardly, you belong to the divine. You know that. Such a felicity, such a joy. So, thoughts giving to the divine. Surrender means, to surrender the mind means to think of the divine. Obviously, we cannot think of the divine all the time. That's what yoga practice is about. Every time thoughts come crisscross, turned upon oneself about others, remember, make an inner effort. Watch them, offer them, turn towards her. That's what. Pick up a book so that thoughts get trained, streamlined along that. Read Mother and Sri Aurobindo. So whatever way, 100 ways. So that's where methods and practices. To each one it works in a different way. To me the simplest way was books of Mother and Sri Aurobindo, which I carried in the washroom. I carried in the bus. I carried waiting in a queue. And what a joy. You are cut off from everything in the world. What's happening next to you is irrelevant. You are taking that delight. Slowly the thoughts get tuned. When we read Mother and Sri Aurobindo, the circuits of the brain, obviously, they start responding to this. They start getting reoriented. So reading Sri Aurobindo and the mother is yoga. It's not just an intellectual process. And if you read Savitri, then it's yoga of transformation, because it contains that vibration. So reading Savitri, reading prayers and meditations is part of the yoga journey. It's not method. It works very logically. It changes the brain, changes the heart. It uplifts, drives away its vibrations, atmosphere, drive away a lot of negativity around. So that's how surrender, after that initial I am yours, it must proceed. All my daily life actions should be tuned to this surrender. If I have surrendered to the divine and I start doing things and go here, there, everywhere, oh, I have surrendered to the divine. That means I am not really sincere in my surrender. And sincerity is the key. Nobody else will see it, but I'll see it. The divine will see it. If we are sincere, we'll see it. And the divine will see it. We can't fool the divine. We can't just say that I have surrendered to your mother. Why is this happening? I am afraid. So if I am afraid, I have not surrendered. As simple as that. So it is not through mental analysis, but through an inner light, the light of sincerity, that one begins to see these things inside. And this is happening throughout the day. So sadhana proceeds with surrender. Surrender in details. First we start with every day morning. We wake up. First thing, offer ourselves to the divine. Ma, this day is yours. Then one does whatever one does. Ma, this is yours. Ma, let every WhatsApp message be from you. And my, this thing should be just nothing but a conduit. Well, everybody, most of the people, morning, most okay. First thing they do half asleep is WhatsApp. As if world has crashed in one night. It's okay, fine. There are things to respond to. But Ma, just a pause. If somebody has sent a WhatsApp, you feel very annoyed. Stay quiet. Ma, may his heart be healed, peaceful. Then send a message, whatever you want to be, feel inspired. Just giving an example, bathing, even most automatic movements, release of things from the body, everything surrendered, offered. Ma, this too I am offering to you, this activity, this action, till it can go heartbeat, breath, walking, speaking, taking a stroll, communicating, listening, speaking, eating, act of living. All this offered. So remember and offer is the practice in this middle phase. Remember and offer. And we have to remember, it looks very simple, but well, somebody comes and I don't like. Remember and offer. I feel this is mine. Remember. Don't be a fool. This is not yours. It has been given to you. Use it rightly. It's the divine's, and offer. And it can go on and on, several examples. And finally, it culminates in the grand surrender. That's why Sri Aurobindo's yoga actually starts when the Gita ends. See, Krishna takes us to a wonderful close. Man mana bhava mad bhakta madhyaji ma namaskuro. Think of me, become my minded, my lover, surrender unto me, ma namaskuro. Surrender brings humility. And then he says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. Give yourself unto me, unreserved, unconditional, not with the idea of having this, getting this. And finally he says, aham tva sarva papibhyo mokshishyami masucha. And Shivinda describes it very beautifully. There is an essay, The Delight of Works. He says that the sword is a delight, you know, that instrument of God. When it is hissing through the battlefield, it is a delight when it is kept in the hilt. In that case, he's happy. I am with the master. It's not itching to be out. It's happy just to be with the master. And the sword is a delight when it is broken and thrown aside. That equal joy discover. So equanimity is a fundamental practice of all through. Equanimity is the one wheel on which, or the one platform on which all this develops. If equanimity is not there, if there is constantly this disturbance, turbulence, then aspiration, rejection, surrender don't really develop. And how to develop it? Life situations. That's it. So this yoga constantly goes on throughout life. Should we take out special time for meditation? Yes, by all means. It's good. But if one cannot, just sit quietly and think of mother. That's easy. Pray to her. Ask, what is my purpose? This one can do. It's not that one has to, everybody starts meditating on the heart. There are many reasons for it. Most common is because we are attached to outer things. We cannot go inside. As simple as that. Whole night people were rowing the boat, got tired, but the boat just didn't move an inch. And they realized they had not taken it off from the anchor. So who is our anchor? If the anchor is divine, then it moves. So it's understandable. It's okay. And some people are not meant for meditation. It's also okay. But we can always sit, look for those moments of quietude, workplace, otherwise, and spend those moments thinking of the mother. That's meditation. Sahanadi once asked mother, "Mother, Sri Aurobindo, I cannot meditate, but every time I think I am in your lap, in mother's lap." Sri Aurobindo says it is one of the best possible forms of meditation. I am in the mother's lap. How beautiful, simple. That we can do. What is meditation? Meditation is the mind is turning around the divine. That's meditation. Concentration is more difficult. Contemplation is also easy, but concentration develops. It's something to be developed. Concentration in Hindi, there is a very nice word. It is ekagra. Ekagra. Make the one, that's my understanding of it. Agra, the one is in the front and everything is gathered around that one. Everything is gathered around the divine. Walking, doing things. She speaks of rolling the sleeves as one rolls the sleeve. So one gathers the strings of consciousness and plunges into the one. If one can do it, do it. Do I need to go to the ashram? Better, because it's the seat of central influence. The supramental force works at its most intense, mother's words. So why not? One can. But it doesn't mean it cannot be done if I have not gone and if I am away. That's not true. But if you go, it's such a wonderful additional help. Do I need to join the ashram? No. Even when Sri Aurobindo is physically there, there were people in the ashram, there were people, disciples outside, Sri Aurobindo's words. Photographs, are they only for remembrance? No. They contain something of the mother's presence in them. If we cannot concentrate inside, look at the photographs. And she has left so much music. We were just hearing and we know the difference. So much help, external aid. So if we use it, that's up to us. So when we use all these means, why? Because there is that one pointed will that I want to be more and more closer to the divine, intimate of the divine. It's not with the idea of becoming Superman. Then we'll start living in a delusion. I'll close with this interesting story. Somebody brought a patient to me. He says, my dad. And he's such a nice person, you know, apparently. He's quiet. He's not speaking anything. I don't know what to do. I said, finally, because, you know, both times are important, his time and my time. So I said, do you think you need some advice from me? He said, no. I said, good. Thank you so much. But then he said something very interesting. He says, I am the Supreme. I know, this is not that he is actually experiencing that Supreme. He says, I am Supreme. He had got himself into that, I want to do this yoga because I will become Supreme. That's why I was cautioning that Sri Aurobindo is cautioned. Aham Brahmasmi. It can lead us into all that kind of, but mother's child is safer. So, that's a different story. This yoga is not with the idea of becoming Superman or supramental being and comparing the color of the skin and color of the hairs. Have they got golden, all this? It's the change of consciousness inside. It must become so much full of the mother that nothing else is there. It's a beautiful line. And with that I'll close, applying it to mother. So the mystic poet says, first Hindi, then English. Lali mere lal ki jit dekhun tit lal. Lali dekhan mai gai, mai bhi ho gai lal. What shall I speak of the color of my beloved? The divine, all relations with the divine, not only mother, father, friend, playmate, guru, master, teacher, in this yoga, all relations. And beloved, paramour. Sri Aurobindo used the word paramour. That means world is there, but secretly you are loving him. Nobody knows that you are having your own romance with the divine, paramour. And beloved. He says that I went to see my beloved, that I believe he has got this color, golden hue. And as I went to see him, what happened to my eyes? I started seeing gold everywhere. And I myself became gold. Chhap tilak sab chini mose nena milaike. Same thing. Chhap tilak is our outer identity. I am doctor, I am this and that. And so rigidly we carry it. He says, first thing he did when he saw me, he snatched away all this. That's what is meant by being bare and nude before the divine. To offer oneself just as one is, stripped of all these defenses. I am this, I am that, I am a good guy, I am a bad guy. All this, even I am, everything. When one is stripped of all this, completely given to the mother, so full of her that nothing else remains except her. That is the royal road to transformation. Thank you so much. Ma.